minus 5, minus 4, minus 3, minus 2, X minus 1. Fire.
Lights out, everybody.
The creaking door.
Dimension X.
Inner Sanctum Mystery.
X minus one.
Dark Fantasy.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Sci-Fi and Horror, brought to you by Duane Old Time Radio. Sci-Fi and Horror features some of the best programs from the golden age of radio, including X-1, Orbiter X, Dimension X, Slot X's, Lights Out, Ray Bradbury, Dark Fantasy, and many, many more. Also, my podcasts are free of ads, so you can enjoy the programs commercial-free. If you would like to donate a few dollars to help me cover the cost of creating these weekly posts, you can donate to my channel. On the bottom of each post, there is a donation link in your preferred podcast player. Anything you donate is extremely helpful and appreciated. Hello, here I am to interrupt your regularly scheduled program with some house cleaning. Some donations came in and I wanted to thank some people. So I am going to thank, get these names correct. Victor gave me a nice donation. They're all nice donations. Any donation is a nice donation. But thank you, Victor. He said he specifically listened to Sci-Fi and Horror, but I believe he listened to others as well. Thank you, Victor. And thank you. I have one more. Thank you to... Oh, my gosh. Where is it? Edward. Edward C. Thank you, Edward, for your donation. I appreciate it. I appreciate you, Victor. I appreciate you, Edward. And back to your regularly scheduled program. We're going to start the month off with Adventures in Research. Their 13th episode, Victory in the Desert. April 27th, 1943.
Adventures in Research. This is Paul Shannon bringing you another transcribed story of science produced as a public service in cooperation with the Westinghouse Research Laboratories. And today telling you the story of one of the outstanding achievements in the winning of the American Southwest. It is not the story of a victory over the Indians, but of a victory over a more relentless, implacable foe, the desert. The city of Phoenix, Arizona is today a busy, thriving community. Capital of the state, it is an important shipper of cotton and vegetables. It nestles in Arizona's Salt River Valley, irrigated by water from the Salt River itself. It is also a world-famous health resort. The time was when Phoenix was anything but a health resort. The scorching heat of the desert made it almost impossible to live there. And the early settlers found themselves faced with a major problem, water. And so in 1867, one of the early American settlers in the valley organized an irrigation company. And for several years, the Salt River Valley prospered. 200,000 acres were reclaimed from the desert, and living conditions were much improved. This, then, is a good time to begin our story. A time when the men of the valley thought the battle with the desert was over, won with hardly a fight. We are back in the year 1889, in a general store in the busy little town of Phoenix itself. As usual, it's a hot, dry summer day. The kind of day when men and animals seek whatever shelter they can find.
Hi, Ed. Ain't seen you in a month of Sundays. How are you?
Okay, Jim.
How's the wife and kids?
Good.
Everything okay on the farm?
Yep.
Hot enough for you?
It sure is. 108 right outside the door. That's hot enough for anybody.
You bet your life. Tell me, how's crops?
Not bad, Jim.
What you raising?
We're cotton, mostly. A few acres of vegetables here and there.
Getting all the water you need?
Well, yes and no.
What do you mean, Ed?
Oh, nothing, I guess. When you add it all up at the end of the year, I guess I am getting enough water. Trouble is, it ain't steady. Seems like just when I need it most, I get the least.
Shucks, Ed. That's nothing to beef about. Like you just said, when you add it up at the end of the year, you are getting enough.
It isn't that. It's just that ever since I moved into this valley, I've thought we ought to find a way to store water so we'd always be sure of a steady supply. So in case anything ever happens, we'll be safe.
Safe? Safe from what? Ain't nothing gonna happen, Ed. Salt River's got plenty of water, and you know it.
Yeah, maybe so. We're not getting one quarter what we should be getting.
Now, don't say that. We got the river pretty well dammed up, ain't we?
Just a few dams made out of rocks and brush, that's all. If we ever had a flood, they'd bust in no time.
Well, what do you have in mind?
What we need in the Salt River Valley's a real dam made of stone and cement. One that'll store up so much water we'll never have to worry.
And who's going to build it?
Well, right now, I don't know.
And what's more, who's going to pay for it? Don't know that neither, do you?
Now, hold on, Jim.
Wait a minute, Ed. I like you. I always have and always will. But I've heard that kind of talk from you so much, I'm getting tired of it. We're getting along okay here in the Salt River Valley. Maybe our dams ain't made of stone and cement, but they work good enough for us. We've taken more than 200,000 acres away from the desert. We've grown crops on them. Yes, sir. And anybody who don't like it here can just get up and go, and the sooner the better. Now, Ed, you listen to me. You're a smart young fella, and you've got a lot of common sense. Hey, Ed! Well, I'll be darned. Walked right out of the store, and he never bought a nickel's worth of nothing.
Ed went right on talking about the need for a real dam. He did more than talk. He even picked out a good location. But as long as there was plenty of water in the river, nothing was ever done about it. After all, people said, why not leave well enough alone? We're doing all right. And all the while, the desert listened and bided its time. In 1897, it struck its first blow, drought. No rain in the valley, no rain in the mountains. The water in the Salt River grew lower and lower. People waited, but there was no rain. 2 years passed, 1898, 1899, and still drought. Meanwhile, cattle died, fruit trees died, crops withered, and families moved away in droves. To guard the dwindling water supply, armed men patrolled the irrigation ditches. 75,000 acres of once fertile soil were forced out of cultivation as the desert returned to claim its land. In February 1900, Ed's prediction came true. A flash flood swept away every dam on the river. In March of that same year, a dust storm. Clouds of dust hovered over the valley. Thick, heavy, throat-parching dust. The desert's gesture of triumph. Its signal of final victory. Stunned by the fury of the desert attack, the men of the valley sadly assembled in a town meeting to decide their future. The chairman of the meeting, the Phoenix storekeeper, called the citizens to order.
Men! Ain't no need to say why we're here. You all know as well as I do. We're here because we're running out of water. Because our cattle and our crops is dying. Because we just can't live here no more. My advice to each and every one of you is to get out now.
Mr. Chairman, mind if I say a few words?
Go right ahead. Speak your mind all you want to.
Thank you. Men, my name's Ben Fowler. Now, most of you hardly know me. Up until a few months ago, I lived in the East. But I've come out here to settle down in your valley, and I just want to say this. I know how it feels to lose cattle and crops, I know how it feels when you can't spare your kids a drink of water. But I tell you, we can save this valley, and now's the time to start.
That's so, Mr. Fowler. Well, suppose you tell us exactly how to do it.
By building an honest-to-goodness dam that'll hold.
Mr. Fowler, we've heard that talk around here
before. All right, now wait a minute. Now, just wait a minute. I've talked this over with engineers, and we have a plan. Not only that, we have a site picked out.
Where?
The Tonto River Basin, right near where the Tonto empties into the Salt River.
Mr. Fowler, that's 65 miles from the nearest railroad. You'd never get your equipment up there.
Well, I think we could.
Even if you did. That there's the steepest gorge on the whole river. You couldn't build nothing there.
My engineer friend thinks it can be done.
Well, how much do you figure it'd cost?
Oh, about $5 million.
$5 million?
Hold on. I know as well as you that there isn't $5 million in the whole territory. So I've got another idea. Now, if I tell you, ma'am, we may be able to raise the money elsewhere, would you consider staying on here in the valley and working for this dam?
What'll we do in the meantime? Where'll we get water?
Rebuild the rock and brush dams that were destroyed by the flood. And while you're doing that, I personally will try to raise the money. Now, is that a bargain?
Just a minute, Mr. Fowler. Before you ask everybody to stay here in the valley on your say-so, we got a right to ask a question. Where do you figure to get this money? That's one answer we want to hear.
Okay, I'll tell you. I think we can get the money from the federal government in Washington.
You mean you'll go to Washington yourself?
Yes, and what's more, I'll stay there until I find someone who realizes we've got to have water. Now, is that good enough?
It's good enough for me, Mr. Fowler.
Good. Now, all you men who are willing to stay in this valley until I come back from Washington, all you men say aye.
Aye.
All right, then it's settled. I'll leave tomorrow morning. And if necessary, I'll take this matter clear up to the President of the United States, Teddy Roosevelt himself.
So Ben Fowler went to Washington, where he talked to everyone who would listen. Most people listened sympathetically and then went about their business. But there were two men who were anxious to do more than listen. They wanted to turn words into action. One was a man who was dedicated to the cause of land reclamation, a man named George Maxwell. The other, an important ally and friend of Maxwell's, Congressman Newlands. A meeting between Newlands and Fowler was finally arranged, a meeting that proved to be an historic one.
Now, Mr. Fowler, before we go any further, I want you to know I'm on your side. I think the Salt River Valley must be irrigated, and I think it's the government's duty to help. What's more, the president thinks so, too.
Oh, he does?
He certainly does. You know how Teddy Roosevelt feels about the West. Well, he'd think he was born out there.
Well, that's mighty good to hear, Congressman.
Well, it doesn't hurt any. But we need more than that. We need facts and figures. Now, you say this dam will cost $5 million.
Yes?
A lot of money, Mr. Fowler.
Yes, I know. But look what it'll mean to the nation, Congressman. I don't hesitate to say that a dam on the Salt River will mean more to the United States than all California's gold, Colorado's silver, and Arizona's copper. And I mean every word.
I think you're right, Fowler. The only trouble is, where will we get the money? Oh, I know. You'll say, let Congress appropriate the money. Well, let me tell you this. The minute a territory like Arizona gets $5 million, every state in the Union will want some.
Yeah, that's what everybody tells me.
And they're right. No two ways about it.
Yeah, I guess they are. And I think it's time I went back to the valley because there isn't any more I can do here in Washington.
Oh, wait a minute, Mr. Fowler. We're not giving up that easily. After all, Arizona's a mighty big place. Going to be a state someday. Lots of land out there.
Oh, there sure is. Lots of public land, too. Land owned by the federal government. Say, Congressman, that gives me an idea. Why couldn't the federal government put some of that land up for sale and use the proceeds to build our dam?
Well, no reason at all. By George, that's it. The government sells the land and the cost of the dam is paid for. Fowler, if I were you, I'd stay right here in Washington to see the Newlands Reclamation Act become a law.
On June 17th, 1902, a telegraph instrument in Phoenix ticked the happy news that the Newlands Reclamation Act had been signed by the president. People forgot their personal interests and began to work together in harmony. They set up in advance the details of a plan for the equitable distribution of the water that would be supplied to them by a dam which was not even built yet. Since the site was 65 miles from the nearest railroad, a road had to be built to transport supplies and machinery. Every single ton was hauled in high-wheeled wagons drawn by old-fashioned mule trains. Almost 350,000 cubic yards of stone were cut from the mountainside. 184 feet at the base, 16 feet at the top. The dam stretched more than 1,000 feet across the mouth of a gorge. It impounded 1,400,000 acre-feet of floodwater. Begun in 1906, the huge main dam was completed in 1911 and dedicated on March 18th of that same year. On that day, it was officially named the Roosevelt Dam in honor of President Theodore Roosevelt. Since 1911, land reclamation has continued in the United States. But it took Roosevelt Dam to convince people that reclamation was practical. It was the result of the resolution of a group of determined men who turned a raw wasteland into a thriving, prosperous community. Winning a victory in the desert was their adventure in research. And that's today's Adventures in Research, produced in cooperation with the Westinghouse Research Laboratories.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoy what I'm doing, I ask you to please subscribe to my channel or channels. Well, hope you enjoyed, and until next time, stay safe, wish you well. Peace.